Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please enter your host PIN. When finished, press the pound key.
When you enter, it does not pass the PIN you have on 12 for your account. Please re-enter your PIN.
And Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Radio. Please enter your host PIN. When finished, press the pound key. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please enter your host PIN. When finished, press the pound key.
Start your show now, press 1 to hear important.
It appears that the host has already dialed into the show. Only one host is allowed per show. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Managing Scene. I am your host, Ronald Allen.
Welcome to another episode of Managing Change on InternetBlogTalkRadio.com with your host, Ronald Allen. This is home for truly engaging conversation. Managing Change brings you an eclectic perspective on issues that affect you, the id, the family nucleus, business, and that entrepreneurial spirit that is uniquely American. And yes, a word or two about life's perspectives on managing change, for that human touch that drives us to unique heights of accomplishment. Carve out the time every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m. for Managing Change on InternetBlogTalkRadio.com. Search Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen. Now also streaming on www.managingchange2.com. Now, your host, Ronald Allen.
Managing Change. I am your host, Ronald Allen, and typically every Tuesday and Thursday evenings, we bring you an eclectic perspective on change, whether it's the environment that is impacting on many continents, the lives of many farmers, housing, and even land rights. And certainly when we talk about business, you know that many people have second and third jobs, and what does that really mean? Has the economy from our parents' time significantly changed that our own perspectives have to adapt and learn new methods of basically surviving, getting on? And one major aspect which has been in force for at least the last 15 to 20 years is the at-will employment stage that we all find ourselves in. And many of people, even just this week, people have expressed to me the concern and frustration that they have experienced when they've been told to do something which is not necessarily on the description, and yet the catch-all phrase that is to manage as required, to do as instructed, has found them in very challenging opportunities, very challenging situations. Well, tonight's discussion is about a gentleman that unfortunately I was never able to meet, Alvin Toffler. He is America's futurist, and he talks about the future in a way that many of us have not been prepared. Many of us have been conditioned very differently. And we're going to discuss this gentleman's work because I find it very interesting that he's not from the mainstream academia. He's not one of those laureates of academic excellence, but rather an individual who was just simply interested in knowledge, interested in how things work, how our societies are developed. So tonight's program, Alvin Toffler, October the 4th, 1929 through June the 27th, just this year, passed away, was an American futurist. And we do welcome your calls at, you can call in 347-843-4378. Of course, you can go to our website, Ronald M. Allen. We have got, finally, got our act together in that department, where you can see both our archived programs and some of our more current, the last quarter interviews with some of our guests. Many of you have experienced this challenge in your business, in employment, and primarily it all really is seated in our thinking, and that is, how do you deal with the new economy? How do we look at forecasting the future? Well, forecasting the future is actually incorrect, because when we think about futurology, we're really talking about the analysis of data. And you've heard the expression, big data. Well, we're really talking about how you can look at the behavior across the globe of what seemingly is independent, unrelated economies, social groups, cultures, where they are looking at resolving their own issues. And looking at this data, we have found that the anomalies, global patterns, start to identify how people are addressing their needs. One, which has certainly taken America by storm over the last 10, 15 years, has been organic food. We have had a major resurgence of purchasing local food, locally grown food. That is very common across the globe, despite many challenges by some of the biggest global corporations, such as Monsanto, to buy up and own land and therefore control what is grown and what is harvested, and therefore what is distributed to the consumer on a global level. Also, logistics, how we look at managing the process of moving an article from one location, a raw material, so let's start with that, all the way to a finished product. Both security, IT technology, managing workflow, and certainly managing life cycles of that product until it gets to the final client. And interestingly enough, now that we find that our dump sites and waste is challenged by the type of material we're being dumped, that's been dumped in them, and let's look at Apple, for example, with all its wrapping and packaging and throwaway material, has caused a significant alarm in Europe. So now we're not only talking about getting that product from raw material to the consumer, rather the afterlife and how it's impacting our societies. So by looking at this data, looking at countries around the world and how they address their own issues, and even home-produced items, typically we go to the store, we buy a product we need, and we bring it home and we utilize it. Well, the futurists have seen that much of our home used or needed items may actually be manufactured at home. People are creating their own products, own consumer products, and then finding ways to get them to market through crowdfunding, through partnerships, through alignment of different resource providers to bring that product to the marketplace. And this is now seen that the law of desire, where one needs something, one desires something, even water, you know, that's one of the very basics on the planet. 40% of people on the planet do not have drinkable water. The law of desire creates a law of need that affects change based on a sustainable economic model. So people who seemingly are in so-called third world environments are actually the catalyst for real change and real growth. And that's partly some of the findings that Alvin Toffler had observed and how it then impacts on other economies. And an example, of course, is transportation, where we typically think of taxis as securing a medallion, securing a license, and then working under or on your own by submitting a tariff to the authority. Well, now, through Uber, which is very well established and looking now in multiple areas of the same kind of business model, has again shifted our understanding of what is possible. So we do invite you again to call in on Managing Change at our new website, managinglifeschanges.com. I am your host, Ronald Allen, and the phone number here to call in, 347-843-4378. We certainly do appreciate your call-ins for this evening's topic. Alvin Toffler, an American futurist, discussing change and how our economy, how diverse communities have changed the way we actually think and how we operate in the marketplace. So the groundwork, as we discussed, is that data allows us to see how people are behaving, how they're creating opportunities, and therefore how we have to adjust our own thinking. There was a phrase that Mr. Toffler used, and that is, are you willing to learn? Are you willing to unlearn? And are you willing to relearn the new economy? And at first, people push back as usual because they have been taught a certain way. And as I've said in previous programs, it's a shame that we have not been shown how to think the way that we program computers. The Boolean system in Google goes in to a database of information and pulls information as needed. Just as I had the opportunity late last year to work at Amazon, and one of the largest technological fulfillment centers in Robbinsville, New Jersey, the computer system allows an order to be fulfilled in a very seemingly random way, random configuration. Instead of all toys, boys, dolls, girls, dolls, toiletries, food, etc., instead of them all being stacked in one location, they are randomly stacked on these mobile tripods, if you will. And they move around this huge warehouse. It's probably 13 square miles of space. And the system is more efficient. It allows for less ambiguity and certainly spoilage, as they call it. And that is another area that we've found that some of our thinking is not efficient. It's not optimizing the new demand on the business. And in his book, Mr. Toffler talks in Future Shock that shift in thinking itself will demand that we think differently, that we consider how we go about addressing our, whether it's project management issues, certainly in education. And there's a very good example in Norway where they're doing away with a standard syllabus and having the students and the teachers put together curriculum that, instead of the traditional curriculum style, it allows the student to select places that they and interests that they wish to engage in and actually physically go to these places and learn the skills necessary so that they immediately think of new ideas of providing solutions to the challenges that are current that could be addressed more immediately than someone going through 4, 6, 8, 10 years and then finding out that that information is perhaps not as appropriate as the experience you would have by going into the factory, going into the work environment, sitting down, analyzing, whether it's process, accounting, medicine even. So these are some of the shifts that we are experiencing in our society, both because of pre- and post-industrial experiences. Many of us are finding it very difficult, very hard to really address our own situations, and that is part of the challenge that you find in change initiatives, in environmental challenges, all dealing with the business environment. And the employee is really at risk. It's the employee who is being challenged by overseas markets. Certainly the price of labor is one. But as we've seen also, that logistics and infrastructure in a company can sometimes outweigh the human cost of delivering that product. So sometimes stateside, I've had the privilege of teaching some project management courses, and some of the individuals that I've worked with are seasoned project management practitioners. And they've explained to me that some of these challenges are such that if you don't have the right infrastructure, the cost of bringing that product to market is significantly greater than the cost of bearing the typical human investment of benefits, security, retirement packages, and of course the administration that goes along with that. So when we talk about future shock, when we talk about Alvin Toffler's perspective, it is both on the enterprise level, how will businesses compete and be able to be agile in a fast-moving, technologically driven environment while bringing on the brain power of its people, of its employees. You're listening to Ronald Allen on Managing Change, this evening's program about Alvin Toffler, an American futurist on change. He retired earlier last year and unfortunately has passed away on June the 27th of this year. And he, as I mentioned earlier, is not really an academic. He's an individual that was able to pursue his passion about knowledge, about how things worked, how social responsibilities, and has seen for himself that we all need to begin to look at ourselves really as economic units, as how we can learn, how the expression is, it's not the person that can't read or do math that is vulnerable to the future. Rather, it's the person that cannot adapt, that cannot allow their mind, because they've been taught in a certain way, to adapt to the new order of how things work, how business is conducted. I've even had the conversation about Donald Trump's winning the election, and I found it extraordinary because Warren Buffett has been talking about the inequalities of wealthy people paying equivalent to the average person that makes $50,000, $60,000 in property taxes. And yet here is a man who literally told us how he did it, and we bark at him. We're missing the point. Yes, he's obnoxious. Yes, he is rude. Yes, he was certainly belittling to most of us. Yet, the lesson that we have to learn about life, because life is the de facto, you can't teach your children to be good in one area if that one area is holding them back. You have to give them a broad perspective and let them choose, just like we coming out of the Second World War, we were taught certain people were the enemy. Well, today's economy, Germany, does not need the EU. And Alvin Toffler even addressed that issue, that matter. The pulling together of some of these trade agreements actually pulled down the leaders in their respective industry areas. And Germany has been a leader ever since its rise after the Second World War in manufacturing excellence. Japan, with Edward Deming, has done the same thing. And yet our minds were still stuck in that 1940s, 1930s mentality all the way through the 70s and 80s. That's 40 years. So how can we shift? How do we shift in our minds? Well, that's where a lot of the strategic interventions that we use when we do our coaching with clients and individuals, clients being company groups and individuals who wish to begin to open their mind, be eclectic, and have a broader palette, if you will, to address life. This is Ronald Allen with Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio. It is a 9:15 segment. We invite you to call in at 347-843-4378 on this gloriously warm evening. My wife and I have just come back from Washington, D.C., and then she flew out quickly to see some family in California. And ironically, New Jersey was the warmest, and that's even from people who just flew in from Florida early this morning, who were just telling us how the temperature was bouncing around the 65 and 40 degree, while we were getting a pretty consistent 55, 60 degrees. Well, that's not how life is it? You know, Toffler's brand of futurism will not get us out of what future shock-related symptoms we may suffer. And that is really speaks to our inability or unwillingness to adjust. We become accustomed to certain ways, certain processes, whether it's at work, at home, with our family members. And even with the writing on the wall, even when we look at an employee agreement, for example, and it says you are at will, we seem to dig in and think that we're going to make the difference. When in reality, and this is after speaking with attorneys, let alone the global oversight that corporations now enjoy, we are throwaways. So how do you combat that? One, you have to look at your skill sets. Number two, I strongly believe that it is what you are naturally drawn to, which will sustain you long term. And Toffler speaks about that, where the social technical change allows you to use a broader stroke of your knowledge and skills in many areas, whether it's teaching, whether it's working with small to mid-middle market companies, whether it's identifying opportunities for the incubators of other small business owners to navigate their changes. And one conversation I've had with some business owners when we conducted a series of workshops at the Rowan College, formerly known as Burlington County College, right here in Burlington, New Jersey, was the ability to, or the reason, I should say, to walk through your certifications. What has that got to do with futurist thinking? Well, many companies are typically approached by third parties that say they'll do the work for them. But what do you miss by someone else doing the work for you? Just like a gymnast or an athlete or someone who wants to lose weight, you can't unless you do the work. You begin to understand what your body needs. You understand what your company needs. You begin to understand the elements, whether it's an individual accountant or a large corporation accounting firm. You begin to understand the nuances of the paperwork, your tax returns. You begin to learn your taxes. The significance of that, of course, is as a homeowner, you realize that the state has been changing how it taxes and or reimburses homeowners. It also has, the IRS has changed the rules and regulations on what you can deduct and depreciate in a single family house, or should you preferably go out and rent space. These are the types of granular changes in your thinking why a small business owner or even a medium-sized company needs to be more hands-on, because those global trade agreements can help or hinder you if you're not aware of the nuances, just as the employee has to understand exactly what does at will mean to them in the particular state they're in. We talk about communities of integration. When you have people traveling from one country to another, one continent to another, and you experience how other cultures address their needs, whether it's literally going out to go shopping, do they buy huge crates of food, or do they manage on a micro level their consumption, which means less waste, which means less loss of disposable income than if you buy a lot of stuff and you keep throwing food away. Do they account? Does that family, does that culture that throws away 4 or 5% of what they purchase every day, every week, every month, do they account for how much that adds up at the end of the year? And could that be a philanthropic gift instead of a waste? So our thinking becomes more meaningful. It's the same thing as when we met some people down in Washington, and they spend a lot of time with their animals, and they observed with us that we are conscious of when we throw away the waste of our food, we give it to the animals in the woods behind us. So it's not throwing the food away, but rather recycling. And when Mr. Toffler talks about these communities of integration, projects and art sciences, it's understanding that you're exchanging and weaving different methodologies in getting an outcome, whether it's those robotics, for example, where people can sit in them, people who are physically challenged, they can sit in these robotics and they begin to move because the robotics assists them. It forms around their body and they can move through both physical, muscular motion and mental motion. As you've seen, one of the news letters we produced the other day, and it talked about how high school kids were controlling drones with their minds. It was a sensory pad, there was a head gear, and in thinking and executing the thought, it was interpreted into signals, and the drone lifted and traveled and landed without a hitch. So if you're thinking this is not real, if you're thinking it's not possible, then the future is a shock. Then the futurologist is hocus pocus. Yet at the same time, all we have to do is look at the literary works or academic institutions, and we'll see that these things are actually being worked on every single day in order to deliver a desired solution from a desired need. And because we don't have that need, it doesn't mean it's not possible. When we don't have that urgency, it doesn't mean that it's not being worked on. It's amazing. We become almost claustrophobic with our ideals of what is possible. The great future tense in your inbox. A lot of people underestimate what is very common today as an email. And as I always share a few examples, pulling into a Wawa gas station and having a conversation with a young man who happened to have managed a few stores in his time and now was kind of winding down and just having some time just to be out with the public and see what life is all about, doesn't even use email. And here's an individual who certainly used it extensively when he was managing his retail stores. And he said, you know, I just don't want to do it anymore. And that is, again, part of that programming that we come from. And I know my education to a point addressed that perspective. Why then do we feel that we are no longer part of the economy? Why do we downsize ourselves and remove ourselves from the economy? That's the way industry treated us, the Industrial Revolution. You're a cog in the system. And when you were no longer viable based on what the system needed, you were shifted to the side. Well, fortunately today, intellectual knowledge never goes out of favor, never gets stale. In fact, as Mr. Toffler says in his book, Future Shock, unlike using a rice paddy, unlike using up a brick, unlike even sitting in a chair, the use of that chair is now complete. You can't add another person unless you're playing a game of how many people can you get on a chair. That's as much as you can do in those scenarios. Whereas knowledge, applying knowledge and information, it actually expands. It becomes exponential. If I say I can use two bricks to create an image, and someone else says, well, I can use a brick and a half, and someone else says, well, I could use three, the knowledge acquired from that exercise allows us to open our minds. The fact that we can now have these robotics that help people with motion challenges allows those very people to be used in different ways that they could not before. Same thing with the holographic image, where you look at reality, these 3D and now 4D goggles, and allows us to look into the manufacturing of a car, or certainly the anatomy of the human body. That is going to significantly change the learning curve, the application, and what is now understood. That's the challenge, what is understood about the human body. We will see things in a different light. And the younger physicians who are coming into medicine and specializing in specific areas, they will make that change. For those who have gone before then, it is our discovery, if you will, our ability to explore what that means. Instead of taking ourselves out of the equation, we should certainly come back in and say, that's an interesting perspective. How can that be used? How can that be applied? How can we bring other people along? People who have significant growth challenges where signals are not sent to the body and therefore parts of the body do not grow properly. How do you challenge that? How do you bring them along as opposed to the legacy, which is traditional, of exclusion? That will be the methodologies that will drive the architecture of tomorrow and will create new dimensions that we are not aware of today. Artificial intelligence, winning at Go. Artificial intelligence is where we are trying to mimic, in point, in fact, the brain, and have machines, systems, processes learn what they've done and build on that repertoire of knowledge, so that as you drive, your computer is telling you not only how much time you need, also configuring new routes, also telling you what other issues you might have with your car, giving you, if you're traveling with others, giving you their information so that you're all going along safely. That when you're doing a small convoy, you're going to a conference or a concert. Artificial intelligence allows us to recreate the brain. And as much as our computers think faster than the brain, it's only because we haven't been taught how to use our mind in that effective way. Back to that Google Bellinian search capability. I'm also very excited about learning more of Mr. Toffler, because, again, not that because he wasn't, and he did certainly go to Harvard and was educated himself, but his interest was about discovery, and that's a very personal endeavor. That's a very unusual for most in terms of looking for different configurations in life, not settling for what you're told or exposed to, and rather just in exploring, discovering, navigating new paths. And that's what he did in a very successful manner. He and his wife, they've been seen at many conferences discussing education, discussing how societies will interact because of a newfound process. I think the wonder of life has somewhat been lost. I think more and more people, it's not a finite group of people, it's not that we should have less people discovering what it is that moves us, that interests us. It should be more of a growth behavior across both cultures, nationalities, and certainly social economic groups. He also talked about social technical integration research projects. These are those social projects that bring technology to be able to deliver more of what we take for granted. And I'll give you an example. When we talk about water, that's fairly standard, but again, 45% of the Earth population does not have fresh running water. So could you take a wheelbarrow design, create a ball, a heavy-duty rubber, a heavy-duty fabric, allow that to be filled, corked, and then rolled miles, which many people have to carry a small bucket on their heads or carry two, balanced with a brace and rope, which obviously water does spill, more chance of evaporation in the heat when they're traveling miles. Now, the average person might say, well, that's not my issue. Conversely, because of the social responsibility, because of the philanthropic interests, and certainly even in crowdfunding, could that not connect two divergent groups of people, one who have and one who need? And the haves get, as we've discussed also previously, that selfish satisfaction of helping someone else, selflessness. And the people that don't have, now their standard of living has raised just that much that instead of worrying about water, they can start thinking about roads, education, small business, types of small business, as a produce stand owner. Then they can engage in those different types of communal, social, again, support mechanisms that two or three people might go to market. You may have even heard my conversation I had talking about the Turkish refugees, how they used a dire situation. Three brothers made a dessert in the camp, and people in the camp came. And then the service people, the armed service people, the Red Cross, they came and they bought the dessert. And then people outside heard about that. And eventually, you had people coming from miles away into what would typically be considered a deprived environment, buying a product. That's how you grow. That's how you be more inclusive of people on the planet in general. So these are the types of things we talk about on Managing Change. My name is Ronald Allen. I'm the host. And we do welcome your calls at 347-843-4378 as we go through tonight's program. Alvin Toffler, who is an American futurist on change, and he has recently passed away on June of this year And we're just talking about how his studies, his interest in both social and economic insights of how they affect us, how they affect our thinking, how they can nurture our interest and prolong our connectivity with our communities. He even talked about Norman Rockwell's methodology that would restore to individual citizens a modicum of control over their careening, coroning lives, the meaning that pictures give. In America, it seems that a smaller percentage of the population understand both literary and artistic interpretation and expression. And in Europe, we always looked at those two areas as an interpretation of the time. It was a statement of the time. And if you read any significant literature, and I don't mean just the standard either Judeo-Christian and or colonial literature, but rather those who are pushed out, whether it's from any part of the world, any nationality, reading widely allows you to understand that there are many opportunities. Instead of getting stuck in our own sense of our opportunities being taken away, you actually begin to open up and understand that there are great opportunities if you serve a different purpose. And Alvin Toffler spoke about that even as early as the 60s and 70s, because democracy back then was even being challenged. Even today, people still think we're in a democracy, and we're certainly not. Not when you have multi-billionaires managing legislation, managing distribution of goods and services. And certainly, Americans should understand that even the internet can be taken away from us. It can be blocked, your signals, your communication devices. The very cost of being on the internet, people don't, again, take the time to look at how expensive is it to be on the internet. I know my wife and I were just talking today, you know, looking at upwards of $130 a month. Yes, we believe that we need it. Yes, we've sold ourselves on utilizing it to the extent that we have. Could we use it less? Possibly. Could we get along with less? Possibly. And I say that because when you look at other people from other countries who are doing great things with far less, then yes, you have to say that you don't need that level, this high level of access to make your voice heard. And it is, in many cases, the lack of information, the lack of a resource that creates the opportunity for people to bring their own resources to the table. That's what we should learn from people who have less. It is not that you have more, therefore you can do more, but rather you have less and make that the catalyst that allows you to do your business, go about your business, and reach people who are of the same thinking. Alvin and Heidi Toffler, they both worked in factories, and that tells you, again, based on the industrial revolution and what that time meant to people, the opportunity to come out of the fields, come out of lower wage earning jobs. And we talk about what's happening in China, where this huge population, 4 or 5 times the American population, is only now getting to enjoy what we did back from the 1920s, 1915, 1920s, 30s. That's what they're going through. So that's going to impact your children. In fact, that's going to impact you and me because we're going to be around that much longer. So that's part of that perspective. And how do you share that perspective? How do you give someone that perspective? Well, you sit down and you talk. You investigate in areas that perhaps you haven't before considered how they impact on you today. I always go back to the conversations we had at Pride Park College about the Germans and the Japanese and how terrible they were. And yet our industrialists were quickly developing partnerships and developing whole economies so that they would rebuild and take advantage. We joke about Marco Polo and his exploits to the East, all of Asia. Now, that same impact is being felt in the reverse. All you have to do is look at how disenfranchised people are. And it's the strategic intervention methodologies that we use in our coaching that help people through these changes. Because we think that this is our world when it's not. It's just a temporary time that we have. And it's the meaning we subscribe to our experience that is the challenge. So if we can shift that, if we can begin to understand where that came from and whether it's really supporting us or is it taking away from our ability to manage our future. Right? And instead of using change, we should start using the word to engage. Because when you engage a child, doesn't a child respond? When you engage employees and you meaningfully engage employees, and do not have that small-minded rhetoric that is typical still of most companies, and quite rightly so, because that's all they know. That's all they know. It's not their fault. Yeah, I've gone to many seminars and workshops, and they talk a great game, but when you hear them in the hallways, you realize that they are still stuck in that industrial mindset of people being cogs, a brick in the wall, to coin a phrase. So Alvin Toffler has certainly educated us, and it's up to us to take it a step further. And you can certainly do that by giving us a call right here on Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio at 347-843-4378 and share your thoughts, your perspectives. How is your life not only being affected, but rather how do you think you can address some of these challenges? How are you addressing some of these challenges? I know for myself and my wife, after 20 plus years in mortgage banking, it has been a challenge, absolutely. And if any coach, any leader, any manager tells you it's straightforward and simple, not to say that it's hard, that's the other extreme, rather finding solutions, finding resources, finding an alternative means to your challenge. If they can't do that for you, then they're not the right people. They're not the right person to be around. In fact, as we speak, Liz Ryan in her HR Monday morning blogs talks about you must be willing to interview the company. You must be willing to interview your belief systems. You need to test, right? The litmus test. You must be willing to test it. And if it doesn't feel right, if it's not giving you the results you need, you should be willing, as a learning machine, your brain is learning, adapting, seeking better solutions. You must be willing to go and find better resolve, because that is the answer. And it doesn't matter how long it takes. Get off the toadstool, get off that mushroom, and seek a better opportunity. And if you don't, then you only have yourself to face, not to blame, but to face. Because, you know, you see many people out here and they say, well, I wish I should have done this and I could have done that. Ironically, they still can. They just haven't taken initiative to begin one step at a time. They think that's corny. What is really corny and what is really sad, what is really desperate, is that they don't look at all this incredible information that's available to us, whether you have to have a computer or not. You can go to the library. Alvin Toffler has educated himself, has shared thoughts about our social welfare, has elaborated on how technology impacts our thinking, our day-to-day activities, and shares that with us. Ray Kurzweil and others use Moore's Law to predict future computing capability and capacity. You may remember Ray Kurzweil is the gentleman who created the fax machine and has gone on to explore and develop many technologies and applications. And that's what it requires. Any one of us can do that. We have to find what area, though, we are most interested in. I've always been interested in how people behave. And in some respects, I should have become somewhat of a psychologist, sociologist, somewhere in there. At the same time, there's still time. And there's still time for all of us if we realize that our age, number one, is only the number of times you've been around the sun. Knowledge does not get stale. The expression, the only thing new about history is what you don't know. And number three, get around people that are constantly exploring limits, pushing those limits, expanding those so-called mental limits that traditional both cultures and societies, social groups, force upon us. It's great to have a philosophy. It's even better to execute it. He did spend some time at the Arizona State University, University of Wisconsin, and pioneered robotic artificial intelligence. He began some of that work back in the late 60s and 70s. He had the fortune of working with the Danish Board of Technology. This was also with NASA. Just goes to show you that if you apply yourself, you know the expression, 90% of success is just showing up. Well, he showed up and he participated. And it doesn't matter how many times you fall down. It doesn't matter how many times you get it wrong. It's getting back in the fight. It's getting back in the ring. It's getting back with that group and being willing to explore the interests that you have. And that's what I took away from reading about this man. It's about, life is about exploring, exploration, knowledge, looking at where things are going. I have a niece on my wife's side who is studying brain biotechnology, where they look at how the brain communicates and they can track the signals and the stimuli in the brain from the external extremities, both visual, smell, touch. It's fascinating stuff. It's stuff that I've never knew. That opens you to possibilities. Once you identify something that you did not know existed and it is of interest to you, now all possibilities exist. And that is really what managing change is all about. As you've heard me say before, you can have all the processes in the world and they all work wonderful if the interest, the passion, the desire, the inclination is not there, then that project is not going to go anywhere. And the reason why some of the most challenging opportunities in construction, in science, in technology, in human development is recognized is because someone is a stakeholder, has taken that interest and pulled together other interested parties and said, let's create this. Let's make this happen. The Mars rover is a prime example of first-time challenges where these technologies had never been used under the circumstances, under the environments for the longevity of time. And yet through extrapolation, heavy math, physics, they've said, let's make this happen. Well, I say the same thing for our brains, for our minds, for the average person that has to get up every morning and grind to that job and be under the scrutiny of that manager who perhaps is less capable and yet serves a purpose. you can take it one of two ways. They are a thorn in your back, or the thorn is telling you to move. How do you bond to that? Do you get up and begin to search for opportunities, use the educational support that the company may offer, maybe use your veteran status, maybe your age status, both young or old, maybe with the changing in our academic funding, you will seek opportunities elsewhere. There was a great joke the other day on a TV show, because of the now seemingly national approval of marijuana, a detective, I love some of these detective programs, they were coming back from a funeral of one of their own comrades, and this woman had been slain, and she was, you know, the standard bearer of the group. And the funny thing was, they're smoking marijuana in the car. One of the agents said, "Are you seriously smoking that?" And one of the other detectives says, "Well, it's legal in New York." The segue of my growing up, where it was banished, it was frowned upon, it was considered a criminal act. And today, in my lifetime, it's now becoming an accepted behavior because it's understood to be beneficial. Abuse will be abuse will be abuse, yes. Those that need it, those that can manage it, which even in cars, driving cars, there are many people that don't understand. You can go 80, 90 miles an hour, just not in a local environment, local town, and expect to stop on a dime. The same thing with the marijuana, which I happen to believe has more positive than negative. It's just a matter of taxing it, as they say in America. It's just a matter of taxing it. So that right there, that's a social statement. You could write that in a literature. You could put that out in a movie. You could put it out in a series, which they did. And that is change. That is your mind accepting it. It's not right or wrong. It's that the community as a whole, the American community, has said that it's time to accept this element in our societies. We will manage it. We'll police it. We'll regulate it. We'll, of course, tax it. And people will be able to continue on with their lives. It's not going to bring the demons of hell down on us, as even some people in my own family believe. So Alvin Toffler, a futurist, an academic, an individual who was driven by himself to look at opportunities that would open up our minds, and certainly opened up his mind at age 87, which is not terribly old, by the way. A lot of people think, you know, 80s was old. Average age in assisted living right now, and this is going back some 9 or 10 years, was 82. And the CDC was showing a 12% spike in seniors who are 100 years and older in the West, who are fully functional. What does that tell you? That is also a change in terms of how we see our parents and grandparents, and even great-grandparents who may still very much be alive, and we can then harness their perspective, as Alvin Toffler, if you read anything about him, will share with you his experience of being working in factories, working in environments that today most of us, certainly anyone under their 30s, 35 even, would shun. Yet there's a learning for that. Just as there's a learning for texting. Who would have thought that we'd all now learn to type? Are we not typing? We just call it texting. In my when I was growing up, young men did not type, but we do text. Just a slight difference of wording there. So he did manage to get a lot of things right in terms of his perspective and how we look at social justice, how we look at the application of industrial knowledge and how consumers now utilize that, how social media impacts actually the very healthcare systems. It is the correspondence of groups of people who are getting treatment that can actually impact how a pharmaceutical enterprise delivers and continues to serve that population, how physicians interact with that population, and of course, because of the reaction of the drugs, whether that drug survives or dies in the marketplace. Never before has that type of social groundswelling, that social responsibility, if you will, been experienced. We talk also about economies around the world. Why is it that Germany is able to sustain itself while country right next door, Spain, is in a total mess? Italy, every 5 to 10 years, political unrest in a very socialistic country. We're creatures of habit. We like the bourgeois mentality of the European governments, and yet in America, we want hands-off, and then we also want that social support that we get from our military, from our local services, police, fire, and certainly our federal programs that our taxes go to deliver, despite the fact that the tax law is actually not enforceable. If you read up on the tax law, you'll see that it's a wiry configuration, because obviously they charge and you can be penalized, you can be even imprisoned. If you understand the law, the legislation, you'll realize that it is actually not enforced on the people, but rather through behavior, as they show in sociology, the behavior of the people can make a thing true. The behavior of a people can make an understanding concrete. And that is also some of the perspectives that Alan Toffler shares. You're listening to Ronald Allen on Managing Change here this evening on Blog Talk Radio, and also at our new site that you can also check in, managinglifeschanges.com, and certainly ronaldmallen.com for our other sources. We're also live on iTunes every Tuesday and Thursday, and we do welcome call-ins at 347-843-4378. It is coming down to the hour now, and we're finishing up with our conversation about Alvin Toffler. He is an academic of sorts, self-made academic. He also established the School for the Future of Innovation in Society, where we talk about innovation not just because of industrial opportunities, but rather to serve the social needs and requirements, desires we talked about earlier, of societies around the world. How our thinking can address some of the challenges that these other cultures need. And certainly, as you've seen, whether it's Rotary, whether it's the Red Cross, and many others, they have people who are willing to travel and invest their own time and money and skills, which is the most valuable of all assets, your skills. They're able to travel. And I've had an opportunity to speak to some people up in New York who were part of the Today's Students, Tomorrow's Teachers, who also go out and help through the Rotary, help other cities around the world, other towns, build bridges, create waterways, establish transportation needs with their own assets. And that's probably the highest order of service that we as humans can give, because it's helping another fellow human being. Anticipatory governance, understanding the needs of the people, those who are coming up. You take farmers from China who are coming into the city who have never been in a city environment. They're used to the agriculture, using their hands, their minds in terms of weights and measures, gases, liquids. That's a different skill set than coming into the city and working in a factory. They're now creating a new lower and middle class citizen that the country itself has never experienced. So when you think of anticipatory governance, how then do you formulate rules and regulations and policies to begin to govern and manage this larger population? How will their needs differ from, say, those in the West? Food, distribution, housing, services, all the different services, whether it's from prenatal all the way up to senior citizens, and of course, hospice care. How does that impact? We've seen in many Chinese middle class, the new bourgeois, the new middle class, they don't wish to have the responsibility of their parents. So that is another challenge. That is another challenge. You're listening to Ronald Allen on Managing Change. We're talking about Alan Toffler tonight, and the gentleman who has was born on October the 4th, 1928, and passed away just this June the 27th, an American futurist, talking about change, talking about how are you ready to learn, unlearn, and relearn. As we come to the end of our program tonight, we do welcome you the opportunity to be on our program. Please send emails to ronald@managingchange2.com. And also, you can send us a call message, leave a message at 609-735-2761. By all means, we welcome you to see or listen to our program on managinglifeschanges.com. That's www.managinglifeschanges.com. You can also access us at ronaldmallen.com, where you'll see some of our other service lines and community activity that we have been developing for this year going into 2017. We do thank you for listening to our program tonight. We are going to sign off at this time, and we will be back Thursday with another discussion. We're looking at a series of change management experts, Derek Abel on strategic windows, Noel Tisch at Beings of Habit, and of course, Peter Drucker, Age of Discontinuity. We'll have some of them live, guest interviews, and others we will discuss as we did today with about Mr. Alvin Toffler and their work in change, in social responsibility, in technology, which is probably the largest, whether it's when you wake up in the morning, touch your cell phone, to having to go to work and run huge gas line machinery, logistic systems, payroll systems, which hit global markets, and certainly financial technologies. We will have those and more on Managing Change. And we wish you a great evening, and we'll be seeing you.
You have been listening to Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen, on internetblogtalkradio.com. Our guests have provided their perspectives about life's perspectives on you, the individual, the family nucleus, business, and the entrepreneurial spirit that is uniquely American. Join Ronald and guests every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 o'clock p.m. for another episode about managing change on internetblogtalkradio.com. And remember, the program is now showcased on managingchange2.com, where you can search for your favorite guest interview or get in touch with them and start a chat. Enter our forum or start your own public or private group to engage others in managing change on managingchange2.com. Catch Managing Change internetblogtalkradio.com every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 o'clock p.m. Be seeing you.